Well, cycling keeps your body and mind fit, as well as reducing your carbon footprint. But have you considered what it does for our economy? A recent study from We Ride Australia has found that cycling and e-scooters are responsible for almost 7,000 jobs in WA and contribute about $2 billion directly and indirectly. Cycling tourism has also had an impact, generating more than $125 million for the WA economy, with a significant portion of this going to regional WA. We're joined now by Wayne Bradshaw from West Cycle to discuss the economic impacts found in the new report. Good morning, Wayne.
Good morning, Jeff. And yes, cycling does have a big impact around the community, not, as you mentioned, as not only in a health and fitness sense, but also in helping to drive the economy.
Well, the report has determined a huge impact on the WA economy. What's the most important finding from the report?
I think one of the interesting elements is that why people ride, exercise and fitness, mental health and well-being, and also sense of connection and getting together with people on bikes. It's a great connector. The other element too, I think, is also really interesting is the rise of e-bikes, an increase, nearly fourfold increase in the number of e-bikes that have been sold. So we're seeing more and more people getting out on e-bikes. It's making it easy to commute, seeing different types of bikes like cargo bikes and, often, e-bikes with kids' racks on the back, seats on the back. We're just seeing more and more people on bikes, which is a great thing.
Now, I was a little bit surprised, Wayne, when you're saying that it has an impact for regional towns and business. Could you explain that one a little bit for us? Because, as I said, I do find that a little bit surprising that regional towns are jumping in.
Well, the key there is around mountain biking and gravel riding. The state's made a big investment into mountain bike facilities. There's places like Margaret River and Nanup and Pemberton. They all have really good mountain bike facilities, and we're seeing more and more people going into the regional areas to ride, taking the scenery, taking the really quiet nature aspect of it, and just enjoying the environment. So there's a big component of mountain biking. We've got trail towns being set up in Dwelling Up, which is not just mountain biking but walking trails as well. So there's more and more opportunity, and places like Collie are rediscovering themselves. So whilst Collie used to rely on the coal mining, now there's huge mountain bike trails and walking trails down there, and they're really changing the way they operate as a community.
Right, that is so interesting, man. And it's actually sort of whet my appetite to get out there and get in the open. What stops more people from swapping four wheels for two?
Well, the key inhibitor for people hopping on bikes is safety. And first, done really well in terms of the major, they're called principal shared pathways. You see the major bike paths that radiate from the city. And we need more and more bike paths and separated lanes to enable people to have that sense of safety. We know that we're going to have to, as a community, we're going to have to embrace alternative forms of transport. Our population is going to grow by 60% over the next 20 years, and we just can't keep piling cars on the road. So active transport, meaning bikes and walking and public transport, are all going to become really important. So we need to set our community up so that people feel safe on bikes, if there's separated bike paths, if there's good separated from the road, and even slower speeds to enable cars and bikes to be able to cohabitate on the same street.
Yeah, that cohabitation thing is a little bit hard for some people on four wheels to come to grips with.
Yeah, it is, yes, and there has been, and look, there's areas on both sides.
I mean, it's pretty weak, to be honest. I really can't see why people can't get on board. They're driving around in over a ton of metal. You'd think actually taking care of people that are just flesh and bones on a bike would be a little bit higher on their agenda.
Yeah, you're right, and people, it seems to be a bit of a symptom of our fast-paced society. I think we just need to slow down, take a breath and go, okay, roads and streets are designed actually for cars, but they should be enabling other forms of transport like bikes, so that people can commute to work, that they can have fun with their family and be safe and feel, you know, that they're not going to be in danger. You know, the safe passing rule is a good piece of legislation, but we just need kind of like behaviour. Let's get all everyone to get on well together, whether it be bike riders or drivers or trucks and the like, so that we can actually use the same space.
Interesting how the whinging about the safe space died down pretty quickly, really.
Yes, well, you know, there can be a little bit better enforcement of it. We'd like to see, you know, that people do adopt it. But generally speaking, it's been really well adopted. We're going to be entering into some studies to, you know, do some evaluation of that. But certainly, the 1 metre passing rule has been, or say passing rule, has been well accepted and across the board, and it's been a good thing for cycling.
Bloody oath. If you're listening to On The Record with Jeff Bullen, I'm chatting with Wayne Bradshaw from West Cycle. Now, Wayne, what other notable findings stood out to you from the report?
It was interesting, the rise in e-scooters too. It's not our real domain, but that was a big increase. But I think the other element too is around the emissions and the saving carbon dioxide and greenhouse gas emissions. You know, that we do, if we're serious about net zero before 2050, we do need to make changes to our lifestyle. And part of that is not putting more cars on the road and looking for alternatives. Transport contributes quite a substantial element to the greenhouse gas emissions, and we need to be able to change our lifestyle so that we can have a better life going forward. And part of that is hopping on bikes and participating in active transport, like I said before, whether it be bus or walking or bike. We're going to have a look at alternative means of getting around so we can protect our environment. So
that's the beautiful part of the 15-minute city, isn't it, Wayne? You know, to get people to focus on accessing businesses and social opportunities that are close by.
Well, I think there's an element too. We really need to focus on creating livable neighbourhoods so that we can get around close by. Research has shown that 2/3 of car journeys are less than 5 kilometres, so there's plenty of opportunity to walk or to use a bike to get to the shops or go and visit friends. And we need to set up the safety elements of that so that people can feel safe. We need to embrace it as part of our school program so that kids are riding bikes more. Remarkably, there's it seems to be a significant proportion of kids who can't ride bikes. And we should make them feel comfortable riding bikes and riding to school. You know, the rate of kids riding to school has dropped significantly from something like 75% 40 years ago to 25% now.
Wow. That's a big drop, Wayne.
It's huge. It's huge.
How are those kids getting to school? Are they just sort of being helicoptered in by mum and dad in the car every day, are they?
That's it. And so there's huge issues of congestion around schools, and kids are not experiencing independent mobility. And they're really just being dropped at the front door, front gate. You know, we'd like to see more people walking to school and riding to school. And part of that is, you know, creating safe routes to school. That's one of the programs we develop with the education system, is creating safe routes to school so that kids know which way is the better way to get to school. We need to have parents having confidence to let their kids riding their bike to school. And part of that is, you know, overcoming the barriers around safety and teaching parents how they can actually release their kids and train and teach their kids to ride and be independent and have that different form of mobility to get to school.
Man, that just really levels me, Wayne. I mean, I used to love that part of travelling to school, travelling as a mob to school and back again. Yeah. It was a social opportunity.
Absolutely, and there's a big part of that about, you know, giving kids responsibility, giving them some freedom, giving them some exercise so that they're not just being dropped off at school, picked up from school, and inside they go to their computer. They can get out and experience some mateship and friendship with their friends, get some exercise, and just have some fun. If we can get more kids doing that, I think it's going to be better for our community.
Now, Wayne, one thing that troubles me a little bit is the amount of crashes that have been popping up on e-scooters. How do we stop them? I had a friend just the other day, had an e-scooter rumble out in front of him on the, and he was on a motorbike, and collision was unavoidable.
Yeah, the research has shown that in places like Queensland, where e-scooters have been implemented, that there is a spike at the beginning of use, but once people get to understand and know how to use the scooters, they become more responsible. You know, you need to have a helmet on, you need to adopt the speed limits, you need to make sure on footpaths that you're going at a slow pace. And so over time, we should see the number of incidents reducing. It's notable that most of the incidents occur on unlicensed motor vehicles, effectively. So scooters that have been revved up and overridden so that their speed limits are no longer implemented.
Right.
And they're actually unlicensed motor vehicles. So we need to understand that, the scooters are there, they can work effectively. They use the same infrastructure and similar infrastructure as bikes do. So we're going to have to work with the scooter crew to make sure that everyone gets along. And it's one of those things, use things appropriately. And it's like a car. If you've got a car and you're speeding, it's unlawful, and same with a scooter.
Are there any lessons to be learned from, say, larger markets or earlier adopting markets that have seen, e-scooters get under control?
I think you can have a look towards places like Queensland, where they do have some infrastructure there that allows scooters, and they have been permitted to be used. It's a bit of a early stages yet, really, in Australia. They are adopted elsewhere overseas, I believe, where they're more controlled, if you like, and that people use them in the legitimate form. But Queensland has a big number of scooters there, and the trips that are being adopted out of City of Brisbane are huge. It's just a way of getting around, and they're apparently working quite well. There's a bit of a way to go on that, and it's a bit out of our domain in terms of bike riding, but certainly, as I say, they utilise the same sort of infrastructure, so bikes and scooters and will need to get along, and as do pedestrians and others.
That is an important one, isn't it, getting along with cycles. Just finally, Wayne, what can we expect from the state government in response to this report?
Oh, look, we hope we're always in the ear of state government to support bike riding, particularly in terms of infrastructure for safety. We'd like to see more funding through to local governments so they can complete what's called the long-term cycle network. So our state's really well advanced in terms of having plans for cycling. They know where the gaps are. We just need to work with local governments to fill that up, fill up the gaps so that people can get around safely. I think acknowledgement of the tourism element is important as well. There's some big events coming along to Western Australia. The World Gravel Championships are here in 2026, so we'll see a huge influx of tourists there. The mountain bike trails down south are fantastic, so we'll see more and more people coming to Western Australia. And even the places like the Mundubiddy are important pieces of infrastructure. It's the longest continuous trail in the world, so more and more people will come to see that. In fact, Jack the Ultra Cyclist, as a sideline, is attempting a record attempt on the Mundubiddy this weekend, which should provide significant international exposure to the Mundubiddy. Not that the Mundubiddy is meant to be there for a race, it's there for leisure and short journeys, but it should provide a good profile for the Mundubiddy over the coming week.
Oh, well, it's a bloody good way to get out there and see the bush. Wayne Bradshaw, thank you so much for chatting with us this morning and talking to us about the report. Great to see cycling is just gaining some momentum in this state.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff, and I hope to have more and more people out on bikes and riding as a family and enjoying the friendship and the fitness that arise out of it.
It's the best way to go. Thank you, Wayne. That's Wayne Bradshaw from West Cycle talking to us about the We Ride report and showing some pretty good signs for cycling in Western Australia. 10:20.